talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Now let me say good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Tracy Voss, the co-founder of Tracy's Dogs, a Texas-based nonprofit that works directly with high-kill shelters, pulling dogs from those facilities, rehabilitating them, and then adopting them out to families across the country. Of course, that description could apply to any number of organizations, but Tracy's Dogs is probably one of the few that has a 32-foot trailer to transport eligible dogs to locations across the country, thereby reaching a broader constituency of new homes. Since launching Tracy's Dogs in 2011, this approach, the latest event was held Saturday, by the way, in Secaucus, New Jersey, has resulted in the adoption of nearly 4,000 dogs, most of which had been pending dark fates there on the euthanasia trail at the shelters they were pulled from. So we'll hear about the origins of Tracy Dogs, its distinctive approach for saving and adopting out imperiled dogs across the country, and more when I speak with Tracy Voss in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll also speak with Amy Jesse, who is the public policy manager for the Puppy Mills campaign at the Humane Society of the United States. We'll discuss the new legislation that places California on the cusp of being the first state to ban the sale of puppy mill dogs in pet stores. Also, our fall fun drive starts 2 weeks from today, October 4th, and I'll inevitably be asked to raise a big, large sum, especially for just less than an hour to do so. So I'd like to ask you to consider making an early pledge. How about today? Give me a head start on my fundraising effort to support WMNF, Talking Animals, and me. Please visit WMNF.org, find the broadcast schedule, locate Talking Animals, of course, Wednesday at 10 a.m. Click on that, and then at the top of that page pops up a little tip jar, and you can just click on that. And if you wouldn't mind putting a few bucks in there to give us a head start, it'd be greatly appreciated. Thank you kindly. So let's get to Tracy Voss and Tracy's Dogs, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Tracy Voss on Talking Animals. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Well, thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. It sounds good, and it sounds a little better than when we first connected a bit ago. So let's hope that that holds. So now, I recognize that there are numerous people contributing to the success of the organization, but I think it's safe to say there's no Tracy's Dogs without the Tracy. So let's begin by learning a little bit about you. What first drew you to animal rescue?
Well, back in 2010, going into 2011, I was laid off from the pharmaceutical industry, and I was so devastated that I decided I needed to do something that made me feel good. So I went to the city pound with my iPhone, and I started videoing all of the dogs that had pending euthanasia dates, posting them on social media, and then sending them to rescue groups. And then I was getting calls from all over the country where people wanted to adopt the dogs that here in San Antonio, they were ready to euthanize. So I just, you know, couldn't believe that. So the dogs that were videotaped were getting out of the pound. And so it encouraged me to do more and more. And then it just snowballed from there. So,
well, let's back up a little bit if we could, just because to me, just in recounting that story, it seems like a bit of a leap to go from being laid off, which of course never fun, and people react in all kinds of ways to that. But tell me a little bit more about how you went from feeling like, okay, well, this is of course crummy, but let me do something cool that I'll feel good about. But how did that mean to you, or was it instant that you said, okay, here's my idea, I'm going to go into these shelters and record them with my iPhone, or were there some steps that kind of led up to that?
No. Well, back in 2011, you may remember a facility called the Brooks Facility. It was like an offshoot shelter from San Antonio Animal Care Services, where they would send dogs when they were full at the main facility. But if they ended up at Brooks, there was absolutely zero public exposure there. So when I got laid off and I had all this time on my hand, I said, I'm going to get into Brooks, because those poor dogs, if they get sent there, they just basically are waiting the 72 hours before they go to euthanasia, and nobody even knows that they exist. So I started there, and then when I started noticing that they were not unadoptable dogs, they were beautiful, friendly, just, you know, gentle souls. And then all of the videos that were circulating around, not only the local rescue groups here in San Antonio, but all over the country, people wanted them. So I'm like, wait a minute, you can't euthanize these dogs. There's people who want them. So I started to pull some of them myself and keep them at the house. And of course, my husband's like, whoa, this is getting a little carried away here. I put pens in the backyard. I called all my friends. I'm like, can you please, you know, foster this dog for me, because I had people that wanted them. But I just needed a temporary holding place until I could arrange for me to get these dogs to people that wanted them. So that's kind of how it started. And I was so shocked when I moved to this area that they euthanized this many animals. And these were animals that were tail wagging and friendly. I was horrified by it. You know, I'm from the north. Now, nobody has a perfect situation in any city. There are strays all over, but I don't ever remember seeing packs of dogs running in my neighborhood. I just don't remember having any kind of a stray problem where I'm from, which is the Chicago area, like I've seen down here. So it was just, it was heartbreaking to see what went on in this city. So I decided I'm going to do something about it. And then I actually got rehired from the company that I was laid off by. So then I didn't have a lot of time anymore to devote to this. So I went on weekends, my lunch hour, or after work, to continue videotaping. And then it just literally just snowballed.
Well, we'll clearly delve into more about exactly how things work, at least in the present day version of Tracy's Dogs. But when you allude to having come from Chicago to San Antonio, so you grew up in Chicago?
I grew up in Highland Park, a suburb,
yeah,
North Shore.
And so I was going to say, were animals a big part of your life growing up? Were you a dog nut from way back? Or?
Oh, crazy. Oh, my gosh. I brought something home every day. My mom was forever, you know, you're not bringing that dog home. You know, anything I would see, if I ever did see anything walking around, I always made sure I got it back to its owner. And not just dogs, cats, baby birds. I mean, anything I could find. I truly love animals.
And so how many dogs, well, at least official dogs, were part of the household when you were growing up?
Actually, not many. And I think that was, you know, my parents are not dog lovers like me at all. And
okay.
I had to beg and beg and beg to get a dog. And my dog, truly, my dog Bear, was like my heart dog. She was my best friend. I would have rather palled around with her than, you know, playing kickball outside or kick the can. My best friend. So, yeah, we only just had the one, believe it or not.
No, that's so interesting because, again, there's just been so many sort of comparable stories that in talking to people over the years on the show. So I'd be curious, and we'll get back to Tracy's Dogs momentarily, of course, but if neither of your folks were particular animal people or dog people, what accounted for you being early on even such a passionate dog person, do you think?
Well, this might be, you know, now that I'm older, I can probably admit this, but I don't think I was a very happy kid. And I will admit I was very quirky, didn't have a lot of friends, and wasn't the social butterfly that I grew into being.
Okay.
I think that my dog, to me, was just everything. You know, she didn't care if, you know, when I, you know, was in that 12-year-old stage where I was just gawky looking and awkward, she loved me no matter what. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but the acceptance that people have from their animals, whether they're rich, they're poor, they're fat, they're skinny, that that's a love that we all wish we could have with everybody that we meet, but you have that with your dog. So to me, growing up, that she was my best friend. So
yeah, it's so funny too that another sort of running theme of this show, and this seems to overlap what you're describing a little bit, is how transformative animals can be. I mean, you're saying like, hey, I was kind of gawky, I was awkward, didn't really have a lot of friends, and probably a little bit shy. And then all these years later, you're in pharmaceutical sales, which to me, you have to be incredibly gregarious or friendly and have a certain personality for any kind of sales, much less in that kind of industry. So, I mean, I'm sure that obviously there were other factors besides that dog when you were a kid, but I just mean that, but it set you on a path that was quite different from how you obviously were as a youngster.
Correct. It really, really did. And there's times when I look back and I think, you know, if I didn't have her, I mean, I'd go into the woods and read my books with my dog sitting by my side, just she and I and my book. If I didn't have her, I really don't know if I would have turned out to be who I am today. I think I would have been so lonely. It was the type of a love you have for an animal and they have for you that is just, you know, it's an amazing, amazing emotion. So I think I probably have her to pat on the head for what I've done today. And, you know, she was a black rat. And typically black dogs in the city shelters, they're like the last ones to get picked, the black dog. And every single time I go, I look for her. I love black dogs, and, you know, and I understand why that is, because, you know, I walk up and down these shelters all the time, and unfortunately, the black dogs are not easy to see, and they don't stand out. So if you're, you know, if you have a camera, or you're just kind of eyeballing who's in which kennel, they blend in. So I don't think it has anything to do with them being, you know, black, other than they're hard to see in the shelter.
It does seem different because both black dogs and black cats, traditionally people talk about how there are often the last ones to get adopted. Now, I think in case of black cats, there's all these kind of weird myths and misconceptions that surround them. But in the case of black dogs, I think it is almost more just a visual kind of aesthetic element.
It is. When I videotape in the shelters, if there's a kennel that has three or four dogs in there and one of them's black, you just don't see the features of them, like the ones that have brown or white, or they have just some color mix to them. The black ones just don't stand out. So they will do much better, you know, if they get to sell themselves where people can pet them and touch them and in that environment. But in the shelters, they have a hard time.
Yeah, it reminds me, at least two or three years ago, I guess now, I spoke to someone who, for this exact reason, they were kind of fashioned from beach towels, but they basically made like kind of colorful, I think sort of bigger than scarves, but sort of along those lines, specifically for black dogs to wear at shelters so they would stand out. You know, so you could see them.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
And
so let me ask you, with your current dogs that live at home with you, are there one or more black labs or otherwise black dogs?
You know, believe it or not, we have the dogs that nobody wanted.
Yeah.
So fortunately, we've done a really good job with our black dogs. We have excellent pictures of them that we take, and we don't have any trouble getting our black dogs adopted out.
Oh, great. So how many dogs do live with you at home that are kind of the last to go?
Well, so we have four at the house that are our house dogs, and then we normally have one to two fosters at the house. But at the rescue, we have three permanent rescue pups that will live there forever that nobody else wanted. So so there's seven between us that are truly our personal dogs, and then the ones that we bring home to foster. But the rescue itself holds 105 or so, which is pushing it, but push it all the time. So it's all, I always want one more. So
all right. So let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Tracy Voss, the co-founder of Tracy's Dogs, a Texas-based organization that pulls dogs from mostly high-kill shelters, rehabilitates them, then adopts them out often at events throughout the country. If you'd like to ask Tracy a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So I think we get a sense that there's a long history of loving dogs, and especially that one dog that kind of, I think, changed everything when you were a little kid. And I think anybody that starts an animal organization has that sort of passion of one kind or another. And then if the organization involves rescues or adoptions, then there's usually a really strong sense of mission. So from when you describe like being laid off from the job and then going in with your iPhone and then getting rehired, I mean, things have sort of shifted around in your life. So what overall would you say is driving you in the Tracy's Dogs mission?
Well, I absolutely love when I see a dog in the shelters and I know I can find this dog a home someplace and I rehab the dog. And then when I actually put that dog in somebody's arms and they love that dog, and I know it's going to be a permanent member of their family. I get updates on that dog. That's like fuel for me to go get one more, two more, 10 more, 30 more. But the way we do things truly is different than any other organization I have ever worked with or have read about, you know, since I've been doing this.
Yeah.
And I believe the reason why I don't know of anybody doing it this way is because it's a lot of work, more than I think most people really understand, you know, how many hours a week it is and what Scott and I put into this on a daily basis. Some people would probably call us a little crazy.
Sure. Well, the best animal people almost inevitably are at least a little crazy and sometimes more than a little. But that's how they get things done. That's how they help the animals. Yeah. So with that in mind, walk me through the protocol of how Tracy's Dogs works. As you say, it is sort of distinctive in some key ways. Maybe we could actually try to work backwards, for example, from the most recent event that you just did in Saturday in Secaucus. I think 49 dogs were adopted. So let's start with, like, where all did those 49 dogs come from? And then let's just kind of go from there back to sort of trace how it works.
So they came from various kill shelters all over the Texas area, including Brownsville, Harlingen, Laredo. I don't think we had anybody on there from San Antonio this trip. But all of those dogs, once the last group left and was transported out, I can't remember how many left last month, but however many left, that created that much space for me to go down, and I call it going shopping. Most women like to shop for shoes and clothes. I shop for dogs. So my poor husband doesn't have to worry about, you know, a Cole Haan bag in the closet. He has to worry, did she tuck a puppy in there?
Right. So, there's a new dog in the front yard for some reason.
There's a new dog here today. So I went and pulled all of those dogs from those shelters. They came back to our facility, and most of them are in really rough shape. So we have a 3 to 4 week quarantine period at minimum to make sure everybody is healthy before they travel. Because when they are coming out of these shelters, most of these pups going into the shelters are vaccine naive. And while they're there, they are exposed to all kinds of things, stuff that we have vaccines for and things that we don't have vaccines for. So when I get them, everybody's usually harboring something. A week later, you've got full-blown upper respiratory infections, all kinds of GI issues, and you know, it takes a good month for a lot of them to even get them to a point where they're ready for adoption. So once we get through all of the illness, we do glamour shots on everybody, videos, and then we market them in the city that we're targeting to go for that month. So this Secaucus was actually a new city for us. And we will definitely be back because not only were the people fabulous, but the store that we do our drop-off at, which was the PetSmart there in Secaucus, they were fabulous. We just had a very warm welcoming with not only ourselves, but all the pups. So we then, once we market them for adoption, and we're getting to a point now where we don't really even need a third-party pet finder or some of the other avenues that people use to get their dogs adopted. We have created a really nice following on our Facebook page, and we have been able to create some of these events with just the Facebook page. People come there, they know that we're coming to their area, they pick their dog out, they work with an adoption manager that goes over the process with them. We thoroughly check everybody out with a criminal background check. We make sure that they have a good vet reference, good personal references. If they say they own their home, that's checked out. So we really, really do go through a very thorough process, and then they wait. Once they're approved and their dog's picked out, they pay their fee, they wait for the arrival of the dog. And it, you could probably see, if you see the any of our Gotcha Day videos, the excitement on their faces when those dogs get there. It is just the most wonderful feeling ever.
No, it's like seeing it's kind of like seeing almost like a combined version of those things you periodically see on YouTube and elsewhere, where a soldier of some kind maybe comes home after a long time and the dog just goes bonkers. I mean, in this case, the dog and the humans are going equally bonkers in some of those videos of yours. But so let me ask a few more questions about how this works. So let's say, keeping with the example of what just happened Saturday in Secaucus, you market the dogs mostly on the Facebook page. People say, hey, I like the looks of Bosco or whoever, and I want to fill out an application. So inevitably, I'm going to guess that, especially now that you've done it a while and it's obviously effective and you have quite a following, some dogs probably get more than one set of applications. So how do you or your colleagues sift through that, and so how is a determination like that made?
Well, that's a great question, and you're exactly correct about some dogs. Some of them will get 15 to 20 applications, which is crazy. But the nice thing about that is then we get to look at everybody that's interested. Like, for example, Stormy was a really popular dog on this last trip. And
why do you think, for those of you who didn't see a picture or a video of Stormy, why was Stormy so popular?
Well, she was popular because she was probably a purebred corgi, you know, little short, little stubby legs, big ears, nubby tail, about 4 years old, cute as a button. So she was popular probably for that reason. But we have others that are not purebred dogs, mixed breed, maybe of personality or just the look of the dog. People just say, I want that dog. And then there are some that you would think would get multiple applications. They do not. And others will get tons of applications, and you'll scratch your head and say, wow, I didn't expect that. But what we will do at that point, because we don't work on a first-come, first-served basis, we do what's right for the animal, what's right for the dog. We have a very, let's say, energetic Labrador retriever, and the dog has an energy level that's off the charts, but we have 15 applications to sift through, and we see some runners on there, hikers, or maybe we have some people that, you know, are just not as active as a Labrador like that should have for owners. So we match them up that way. So we do, you know, look at the dog's personality, their lifestyle, and then we make our selection. And we're also getting to a point where, since if you can picture being an adoption manager and getting 15 different or 20 different applications on one dog, so how do you know these people are, you know, the right people for that dog? Aside from everything I just went over, a lot of people are starting to really separate themselves from the pack, so to speak, by going above and beyond and showing how much they want that animal, that dog, by attaching pictures of their families. They may write us a story about, you know, why they want the dog. So when the adoption managers are going through these applications and she's got 20 of them and three of them have attachments and, you know, just pictures and you name it, that really speaks volumes to me, because that's what I would have done as a child, especially.
Sure.
Somebody would have said, tell me why you want this dog, and you can, you know, put together a project for me on why you want that dog. Mine would have been the best project in the bunch.
No doubt. Yeah, I think we've already realized that by now. So, because I guess what you're saying is that not only reflects a real commitment on the hopeful adoptive family, but it also gives your adoption managers there at Tracy's Dogs just that much more to go on in terms of saying, okay, this family and this dog is really the right fit.
Correct. And that's what's most important to me, is that we match them up the right way into the right dog, because we get people all the time that will pick a dog and they tell us a little bit about their lifestyle, and we talk to their friends and we say, that is not the right dog. And we suggest another one. So I would say 40% of our applicants applied for one dog and end up with another.
Well, that's what that brings me to my next question, because I thought, okay, well, back to Stormy. If Stormy got 15 applications, and presumably there's only going to be one family selected, do then those other 14 get redirected, especially because you've also mentioned that some dogs that you thought for sure would be adopted just don't end up. So do one or more of those 14 that didn't end up with Stormy get directed towards?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. So we have a really good matchmaker at Tracy's Dogs. Her name is Carrie. And I always tell her, she's like petmatch.com. Instead of match.com, it's petmatch.com. She has a knack for just matching up the applicants with the dogs. And that's why our return rate is less than 2%. So it's, you know, I know it's a, but to some people, it's a little scary. Wow, I'm going to adopt a dog I've never met.
Yeah.
I've never pet the dog. How, what if I don't like the dog? Or, you know, what if this doesn't work out? And everybody has some level of concern when they go through our process like that.
Yeah.
But with a return rate of less than 2%, and when you talk to the families that were nervous before, they get their dog, and then you speak with them a couple weeks later, or a lot of families we still keep in contact years and years and years later, they say that was the best decision I ever made. It worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
So, Tracy, these events are basically look to be about monthly. So does that mean that there's a month from when Stormy and all his or her fellow dogs were presented for the Secaucus event for people to apply, for Carrie and others to do their magic? Or is there a longer window? It's just that the events happen to be monthly, but there's a longer period of time during which people might apply for a certain dog and have follow-up material or questions that are directed from Carrie and others in their direction. What is the window typically from start to finish for most dogs that do get adopted through Tracy's Dog?
It's 30 days.
Yeah, okay.
So, for example, if you saw Stormy for adoption this month, but let's say you were not close to the destination city that you wanted to pick her up. She was available for our September transport. But let's say you called and you had an approved application, but I can't pick her up till October. We never hold dogs over. So they are available for that month. If any of them do not get selected for that transport, then they're available for the next one. And the reason that is because rescue life, in my humble opinion, is no way for a dog to live. And I want them in homes as soon as possible.
Sure.
I don't want them living in a rescue for any longer than they have to. So we want them to get into homes. And then if they don't get selected, they'll be on available for the next transport.
And how do you guys decide, just I guess geographically, what the next, like it was Secaucus Saturday and then in October, don't remember offhand, but where is the one in October?
I think they're going to Plymouth Meeting. My husband, Scott, sets the schedule for the entire year.
Okay.
So we have it, and we're working on 2018 right now, which I hope will be posted here, hopefully in, you know, sometime November, December. But he has that planned out. He does that a year in advance. And we select our cities very carefully to make sure that they have the population to pull from, so we're able to be very choosy about our applicants and where our dogs go, and we don't like sending them into cities that have huge overpopulation problems like we have here. Even though I know every city, I do recognize that there is a stray problem in every city. And I will also mention something sometimes that I will hear, and I would love to set the record straight on this, because a lot of times on our Gotcha Day videos, people will say, well, how come you don't have more pit bulls on there? How come you don't have more chihuahuas on there? And what I will, you know, answer to that is we take pit bulls in as we have space available. And we're not a pit bull rescue, of course. We're an all-breed rescue. Pit bulls, as much as I love them, and three of our personal dogs are pit bulls, they are not easy to adopt out. And they're available at every single shelter that you go into, whether it's San Antonio, New York, L.A., you can find a plethora of, you know, pit bulls. But we rescue a lot of dogs that are not commonly seen in those areas. So some of the shelters down in Brownsville, Harlingen, and Laredo, there's a lot of dogs down there due to backyard breeding that are just not seen commonly in the northern shelters. And if I don't take them, they will euthanize those animals. So I take as many as I can. And I'd like to, you know, distribute them to places all over the country that just don't have a selection up there of the type of dogs that I see in our shelters.
And that brings me to a couple of connected questions, I guess. Is it always that the dogs that you're pulling from are Texas-based shelters, or is there sometimes a wider net cast than that?
Well, I would love to broaden this out to all shelters, but Texas keeps me pretty busy. The euthanasia rate down in Brownsville and Harlingen and Palm Valley is still very, very high. But any shelter that needs help, I would, you know, love to help everybody. But of course, space is always an issue, and you know, there's a long list of other things that prevent me from doing that. But I will look at dogs from anywhere if they need help. If they have a pending euthanasia date and they need our help, we'll certainly consider. But it's, you know, Texas is just so overrun. I feel a lot of times like I have a spoon and I'm trying to empty the ocean with
it. It's a steady stream and then some. And then what criteria does this, Scott, it sounds like primarily maybe you and Scott or maybe others collaborate overall, but what criteria is used to determine what cities will be where the adoption events themselves are held?
A lot of it is, you know, like average home income or the population of the city, how many rescue pets are already available in that city, or the type of dogs that are available to those people in those cities. So it's a formula that he uses. We don't take our dogs into areas like San Antonio, of course, because we have enough dogs here and we have a wide variety. But we hear over and over and over from our adopters in the cities that we go into, you know, I visited my city shelter. I really wanted to adopt a dog locally, and I you know, visited 10 times, but they did not have the selection that I see on your website, which is another reason why they will adopt from Tracy's Dogs. And then, of course, because we know our dogs so well, we're able to give them information to make sure that it's the right dog for them. When you get a dog from the city shelter, you know, most of the time, you know, the dog is coming right from off of the streets, and there's no history on the dog. Is he good with kids? Is he good with other dogs? Is he this or is he that? So it's a little harder to make that match work perfectly, which is another reason why I think people do come to us, because we know our dogs so well. So sometimes, you know, I have a dog that you know, somebody might just say, I want that dog, that's the only one I want. And the answer might be no, because it's just, you know, you might live in an apartment and you may not, this dog might weigh 75 pounds and have an off-the-chart energy level, and he needs a different type of an owner. And there's just various different scenarios where we might match them up with different dogs. And if you go to the city town, you can pretty much get whatever you want. You just don't know if that dog is going to be a good match for you.
For sure. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Tracy Voss, the co-founder of Tracy's Dogs, which pulls imperiled dogs from high-kill shelters, rehabilitates them, and adopts them out at locations across the country. We're in our final moments, but we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So, as we've kind of alluded to once or twice, these monthly events typically are held at a given PetSmart in whatever city that Scott has chosen. When did you forge an alliance with PetSmart, and why them? What about the PetSmart operation makes it a particularly good fit with Tracy's Dogs?
Well, honestly, initially, you could probably imagine when you're trying to adopt dogs out and people have never heard of you, and then you're asking them to pay an adoption fee, and I'm going to deliver the dog to you. Initially, we got a lot of, you know, had a lot of concerns like, well, wait, is this a scam? Is that, I mean, you're asking me to pay you money and then you're going to send me this dog. But, you know, people were nervous to do that because we did not have the reputation that we do now or the following. So when we partnered with PetSmart, people would call PetSmart. PetSmart would, of course, say, yes, they come up here. They're great people. The dogs are wonderful. Don't be worried. They're going to deliver. So, you know, it was nice to have a well-known brand like PetSmart where our dogs were going to be taken to. So initially it was more of a brand recognition that way.
Sure.
And then we did hold some events at PetSmart. We used to do, you know, bring some dogs that were actually available for adoption and have people, you know, be able to meet the dog before they adopted them. And we've strayed away from that because don't want to encourage the knee-jerk adoptions where somebody didn't want a dog, but the dog's so cute, oh, let's get a dog today. That made us uncomfortable because we did have a couple of returns when we did that, and I just was not comfortable with that. And being that we're out of state, the dog has to be delivered that day. We can't, you know, have somebody come in, process an application, and then have the dog stay for two or three more days while they really decide if they want the dog.
Right. Yeah. It just seems like everything about that sort of impulse buy, like you're getting a pack of gum or something at the checkout stand.
Correct.
So yeah, I see that would not work, especially given the protocol that you described that works completely the opposite for a typical thing. Well, it sounds good. And just one quick thing I want to add is in case people are still picturing like when it's at PetSmart that it might be like in the store and just like some other adoption events. I mean, these are so sprawling that it's typically in the parking lot of a PetSmart or adjacent to their parking lot because there's so many people and so many dogs in the big vehicle from Tracy's dog. So it's quite a massive operation when it comes down to it. So, Tracy, we have just about reached the end of our time. I've been speaking with Tracy Voss from Tracy's Dogs, and the website is tracysdogs.com, TracysDogs.com, and you can find out more about what we've been talking about and see all kinds of dogs that are currently available, depending on where you want to travel or where you're listening to this for your for one of their next events. So, Tracy, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. Thanks for finding all those. We should mention we did at the top of the show that you guys have, I guess, in around 6 years' time, placed upwards of 4,000 dogs through this into homes.
We
so
have.
That's pretty spectacular.
That doesn't count the ones that we were videoing in the beginning. Those, but it's awesome. I love it.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for doing it, and thanks for joining us today on Talking
thank
Animals.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Bye-bye. In a few moments, I'll speak with Amy Jesse, a puppy mills expert with the Humane Society of the United States, about the significant new legislation pending that would make California the first state to ban the sale of puppy mill dogs at pet stores there. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with a new piece by an old fave here, and very much in keeping with today's canine-centric show. This is Paul F. Tompkins with a portion of a piece called Apologize for Your Dog in today's Comedy Corner. Talking animals.
The scariest thing I've experienced lately is dogs. I never used to be afraid of dogs, and then I lived in this building, this apartment building, that made me scared of all dogs now forever, because it was like weird immersion therapy. It was like I was supposed to be scared of dogs, and I wasn't, and somebody wanted to get me there. Like, no, you're supposed to be scared of dogs. I know what to do. I'll put you in this crazy-ass building where everybody has an insane, vicious dog but you. That's what it was like. Everybody in this building was like, I missed a memo in the common area or something where it's like, let's all get crazy dogs. If you don't want to get one, check this box. And then I never saw that memo. Every day this happened, every day, I would be walking down the stairs from my apartment. And just as I was kind of like, you know, thinking, what is today going to hold for me? I would like turn the corner on the landing and then, dog out of nowhere. Barking so angry at me. Why is he so mad at me? So mad. And it's like, well, what happened was I would, of course, jump, you know, and then I'll be perfectly honest with you. Sometimes I would make a noise of some sort. Like I would jump and go, like that. What drove me crazy was the person whose dog it is, the person standing there on the other end of this leash, right? They would not apologize for the dog for what just happened. Like, they saw it happen. It's not like it was subtle, right? It's not like they were looking away like, oh, what's happening? Are you guys talking? We're not talking. This dog wants to have my face in his mouth. Never, never an apology. And it's not like I didn't give them the in for the apology either. I mean, I tossed them some nice fat softballs. You know what I'm saying? I made it easy. Just something like, wow, wow. He certainly gave me quite a start, that dog that is your responsibility. Man, oh man. Whew, trying to catch my breath here. Oh, really scared me there. Me, a fellow human being with feelings and dignity. Whew, it's like I saw my life flash before my eyes. Oh, man. I was so scared, so scared. I mean, I'm sure that the dog would apologize if he could, but as he... as he lacks the capacity for speech, I wonder who will pick up the baton. Oh, of the three of us, who here is best equipped to apologize for what your dog has done? He's a dog. He's out. I am the person who was scared. Doesn't make any sense, really, for me to do that. Oh, what do your calculations tell you? Because I'm out of people. Nothing.
That was Paul F. Tompkins with part of a piece called Apologize for Your Dog, taken from his album Freak Wharf. Having a little trouble so far reaching Amy Jesse from the Humane Society of the United States. Going to try one more time, and we'll be right back with you. Talk. Yay, we found Amy. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. I just this wouldn't quite ring, and I tried a number of times. But the main thing is, here you are. So, again, we just want to say that you're Amy Jesse from the Humane Society of the United States, and we're going to talk briefly about the new legislation pending in California. Let's just start really quickly on a remedial basis. For those listening who might not be familiar, what exactly is a puppy mill, just briefly?
So a puppy mill is a inhumane breeding facility where the health and well-being of the animals is completely disregarded in order to maximize profits and maintain low overheads. And so these are really different than what we would refer to as responsible breeders who really care about the dogs, who treat their dogs like pets, who often have the dogs in their homes. These are facilities that picture a factory farm. But with dogs that are there to breed, and the product is their puppies.
And so your job at HSUS is overseeing efforts to become aware of those, investigate those operations, and obviously, whenever possible, curtail or shut them down?
Yes, that's right. And my focus is really on passing legislation that helps to do that. So we have, and which brings in the California bill, but we
right.
work on legislation that directly regulates puppy mills, is what we call commercial breeder laws. But then we also work on legislation that cuts off the sales supply. So in states like California, the production side isn't nearly as big of a problem. It's not a major puppy mill production state, but it's a major importer because it's such an enormous market. And so you have out-of-state puppy mills often selling to California consumers, and one outlet that they prefer is pet stores because people can come and see the puppies, and who doesn't get sucked into that cute puppy in the window and want to bring that puppy home? And they know that, and they prey on that. The problem is that those puppies often are sick. They often have behavioral issues because of where they come from. And on top of that, people don't realize they're supporting an incredibly cruel industry when they buy a puppy from a pet store.
So let's talk briefly about this significant new legislation that still needs to be signed by the governor there. But otherwise, tell me a little bit about that in our just remaining moment or so.
Sure. So Assembly Bill 485 prohibits pet stores from selling dogs, cats, or rabbits unless they come from a shelter or rescue. And this really, it's codifying into state law what has already been a local movement in California for years. You have the major cities in California already have laws like this. A lot of cities that used to have pet stores have laws like this. There's 36 in California local ordinances, and so this is turning it into a state law. And this movement is really all across the country, but on the local level. California is the first to enact a policy like this on the state level, but we do expect states to follow their lead because California is such a trendsetter.
Right. So it will be significant. And does everyone, yourself and others that have the kind of expertise you do have, expect that Governor Brown will sign the bill?
Well, we certainly hope that he will. He has a really great record on animal welfare bills. And this is a popular bill. It's popular with his constituents. It passed the Senate without any no votes. So it passed overwhelmingly in the legislature.
Yeah.
So we think there's a good chance, but we're making sure that he knows how popular this is and that he's hearing from as many people as possible.
Great. All right. Thank you so much for making the time to join us, Amy. I wish we'd had a little more time to talk, but we lost some precious time trying to get a hold of you there. But thanks for filling us in. We'll keep a good thought for this thing, getting the signature from Governor Brown.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We have just about reached the tail end of today's edition of Talking Animals. I'll tell you about as many things as I was hoping to, but I do want to tell you about one thing that's coming up that I'm participating in, and that's KittyCon, which is a cat fan convention, and that's going to be held in Tampa Saturday, October 14th at the Holiday Inn West Shore from most of the day, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and it's produced by the St. Francis Society Animal Rescue, which is the oldest and largest foster home-based cat rescue in the Tampa area. So there'll be music and cosplay and children's activities and talks and even yoga classes with cats. So you can find out more about going to KittyCon.tampa.org, and I will be emceeing the proceedings all day there, so come out and say hi, and we'll have a little more information for you that next week. It is the tail end of Talking Animals. Rob Lawyer is up next with Radioactivity. After that, midpoint at noon with Nola Lalay, 1 p.m. Craig Kopp and John Gilmore preside over executive session. And this is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Homegrown, handpicked music and news. We'll catch you next Wednesday when we'll be talking about ants, among other things, on Talking Animals. NPR News Headlines is up next, and then Rob Lloyd of Radioactivity. Thanks.